This is Conversational AI Watch, edition 127 for August 15, 2026, sponsored by Clinician Assist.
Glad to be here for this one. It's a huge week.
Yeah, it really is. So imagine you are an 80-year-old veteran, right? You're fighting for medical benefits, and a chatbot hallucination somehow lands you in federal court.
Oh, man.
Or, on the flip side, you're a 17-year-old on trial for murder, and the jury is sitting there reading your ChatGPT history to determine your guilt.
Yeah, it's a completely wild reality we are entering.
Exactly. So today's stack of sources is really all about collisions. We're looking exactly at what happens when artificial intelligence crashes into these highly regulated, deeply human spaces.
Which is pretty much everywhere at this point.
Right. We're taking you inside the therapy room, the K-12 classroom, the criminal and civil courts, and these massive government bureaucracies.
Yeah. And the friction in all those spaces is just palpable right now.
For sure. So our mission today is to figure out how the law, the tech industry, and just everyday people are reacting when the machine suddenly pulls up a chair in rooms where only humans used to be allowed.
Okay, let's unpack this with the lead story, starting in the most intimate human space of all, psychotherapy.
Yeah, the legal landscape here just shifted dramatically. I mean, it is going to completely rewrite how mental health tech operates.
Oh, absolutely.
So this past Wednesday, August 12th, Colorado's House Bill 26-1195 officially took effect.
Which is a really big deal.
Massive. It's a first-of-its-kind psychotherapy AI law, and the mechanism it uses is fascinating. The law explicitly bars any licensed clinician from letting an AI system engage in therapeutic communication with a client, unless, and this is the kicker, unless the clinician, the AI, and the client are all present in real time.
Wait, all three of them?
All three. It completely forces a synchronous interaction. Okay, I really need to visualize the mechanics of this, because if I'm a licensed therapist in Colorado, this means I can't just hand my client an app, tell them to, you know, chat with an AI for the weekend whenever they feel anxious, and then I just review the transcript on Monday morning.
Nope.
That entire workflow is now just illegal.
Yeah, subsection 5 of the Act is ruthless on this exact point. Mm. No interaction can happen without the synchronous, real-time presence of all three parties.
Wow.
And furthermore, an AI system cannot generate therapeutic recommendations or treatment plans without review and approval by the human licensee.
So the human is totally on the hook.
Exactly. The law leaves room for administrative use, like having an AI summarize a live conversation to write clinical notes.
Right, which a lot of people do.
Yeah, but the human clinician retains absolute responsibility for the output. And there is this critical consumer protection built in, where if a client refuses to consent to an AI recording the session, the provider cannot deny them care.
That makes sense. You know, when I was reading through the SOTUS material on this, the first thing I thought of was a chaperone on a very intimate date.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Because you have this incredibly private dynamic between a client and a machine, but state law now requires this highly qualified, really expensive human just sitting there actively watching it happen in real time.
Which totally changes the economics of it.
Right. My question is, doesn't this essentially kill the primary business model of AI therapy startups? Because the pitch to venture capitalists for the last, 3 years has been pure scale.
Yeah, infinite scale.
The dream was that one therapist could oversee 500 clients chatting asynchronously with an AI.
What's fascinating here is the massive workflow and staffing costs this creates for builders and investors.
Yeah.
It absolutely attacks that infinite scale model you're talking about.
It has to, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you are an AI therapy startup today, compliance isn't just a disclosure checkbox on a welcome screen anymore. You now have 4 different states restricting AI therapy by statute, and they all want something slightly different.
Which sounds like a nightmare for developers.
Oh, completely. Nevada bans AI from independently providing mental health care. Illinois bars therapy delivered by anything but a licensed professional. Vermont has a similar prohibition.
But Colorado went further.
Right. Colorado's real-time three-way structure is a totally unique specification. If you are building a product, you have to engineer a backend that can verify a therapist is actively logged in and monitoring a chat in Colorado while managing entirely different rule sets for users in Nevada or Vermont.
Which is just wild. And what blows my mind about this legislative reality is the contrast with California.
Ah, yeah, the suspense file.
We have sources tracking a bill introduced by Senator Steve Padilla, and it was almost identical to the Colorado Clinician Review Bill. And it sailed through the California legislature.
Like zero resistance early on.
Yeah, it passed the state Senate 39-0. Every single committee vote was unanimous. And then on August 5th, it just vanished.
How does a unanimously supported tech regulation just evaporate?
Well, it was sent to the assembly suspense file.
Right.
For anyone who doesn't track the internal mechanisms of state legislatures, the suspense file is essentially a procedural black hole. It's where bills with state costs go to quietly die without an actual recorded vote.
So it's political cover.
Absolutely. I mean, no politician wants to put their name on a no vote for a mental health safety bill.
Of course not. That would look terrible.
Right. But they also might be facing massive pressure from the tech lobby behind the scenes. So the leadership simply doesn't let the bill out of the suspense file room. It just suffocates in a drawer.
Wow.
You have two states that wrote nearly the exact same rule protecting the therapy room. One is enforceable law as of Wednesday, and the other died in silence. So Colorado is showing us what happens when lawmakers demand affirmative, real-time consent for every single AI interaction. But what happens when the tech industry bypasses consent entirely and just, flips a switch on minors?
Yeah, this is a Google Classroom story.
Exactly. We saw the answer to that this week with Google testing the absolute limits of uninvited AI in the classroom.
Yeah, so Google turned on its Gemini chatbot inside Google Classroom for a massive cohort of elementary through high school students.
Which is huge. Just to scale this for you listening, Google Classroom has over 150 million users globally.
It's massive. And up until this week, this specific generative chatbot feature was locked down. It was automatically enabled only for students 18 and older.
Which makes sense for generative AI.
Right. But they went into the back end and just flipped the switch for the younger kids. So now they can instantly start asking the AI for math help, generating study guides, or even producing images based on course materials.
See, I have to push back on Google's rollout strategy here. Why flip the switch now and why do it so quietly?
Yeah, the timing is interesting.
Because I was reading the quotes from district leaders in our sources and they were completely blindsided by this. Derek Moore, he's the CTO for Palo Alto Unified. He literally went on record saying, "We seem to be the last to know."
Ouch.
Yeah. It feels like Google intentionally bypassed the parents and the teachers.
Well, you have to look at the underlying mechanism of software distribution here.
Okay.
James O'Hagan, a digital equity director out in Wisconsin, pointed out the systemic issue. He said, "The default should be permission, not adoption."
Wow, that's a great quote.
Right. He was actually so frustrated that he went into his administrator dashboard and proactively turned off Google Search Services entirely.
Just to block it.
Yeah, just to block another silent update Google has planned for the fall.
So what does this all mean? Why is the tech industry so relentlessly focused on an opt-out default rather than just asking schools to opt in? It seems like an opt-in would generate far less backlash.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the lever of absolute power in the software economy is the default setting.
Because of friction.
Exactly. Friction kills user growth. An opt-out default clears a product into an institution instantly, overnight, with zero marketing spend.
Right.
If Google requires an opt-in, they have to run a massive sales and education cycle for every single one of those 150 million users, or at least convince thousands of skeptical district administrators to actively click yes.
And nobody wants to do that.
No, it's too slow.
Yeah.
By making it opt-out, the institution's trust rests entirely on an overworked school IT administrator finding a tiny checkbox in a massive dashboard they might not even know exists.
And this strategy of bypassing friction isn't happening in a vacuum. It is deeply connected to a massive lobbying fight happening in state houses right now over who actually decides what tech reaches minors.
Well, the CCIA fight.
Yeah. I'm looking at our sources tracking the Computer and Communications Industry Association, or the CCIA. They are a massive tech lobbying arm.
Very influential.
Yeah. They recently fought incredibly hard to veto Vermont's mental health chatbot bill, and they lost. The governor signed it anyway. So now their policy arm is pivoting, and they are aggressively pushing a completely different piece of legislation, Nebraska's LB 525, as a template to other state houses. And I'm looking at this Nebraska model, and it feels fundamentally different than what Colorado just passed.
It is entirely different. The Nebraska model is a much lighter disclosure-only template. It
Ah.
requires a self-harm protocol and requires the software to disclose that it is an AI, but it does not bar AI from delivering therapy.
So no chaperones.
Right. It doesn't require a human chaperone like Colorado or Vermont. So tech lobbyists are taking this letter framework and shopping it around the country as the alternative.
And simultaneously, another major player is entering the chat here, the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, the ITIF. They just published a paper urging lawmakers to completely drop age verification requirements for chatbots.
It is a bold stance right now.
Very bold. They want what they are calling a trustworthy child flag. And just to impartially lay out the facts from our sources here, the ITIF is a think tank backed by Alphabet, Meta, Amazon, Apple, and Anthropic.
So all the heavy hitters.
All of them. And we aren't taking a stance on the morality of the policy itself, but I don't quite get the mechanics of this child flag. Why would they advocate for that right now?
Because they know regulation is coming. And age verification requires collecting user IDs, which creates massive privacy liabilities and, frankly, massive user friction.
So they want to outsource it.
Exactly. A trustworthy child flag moves the responsibility away from the AI app and onto the operating system. Basically, Apple or Android would verify the user as a child, pass a digital flag to the chatbot, and the chatbot adjusts its safety settings without ever having to run its own age verification.
Wow, that's clever.
Yeah, they are shifting from fighting state laws head-on to flooding the zone with alternative legislative templates.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be the ones holding the pen when the rules get written?
But, you know, while the think tanks and lobbyists are arguing over theoretical policy templates, the actual consequences of unverified access are already tearing through the justice system.
Yeah, the court cases.
We have two massive court cases in our stack today, one criminal, one civil. Let's start with the criminal case in Acton, Massachusetts, because the premise of this trial is going to set an unbelievable precedent.
Yeah. And to be incredibly clear for you listening, this is a criminal murder prosecution where the defendant has pleaded not guilty.
Right.
It is not a wrongful death lawsuit. A 17-year-old, Arjun Aravind, have been charged with killing his 45-year-old mother, Sudhavin Kachasan, and his 14-year-old brother, Siddhartha Aravind.
It's an incredibly tragic story. And the reason it intersects with our deep dive today is the evidence the prosecution is choosing to cite.
The ChatGPT history.
Yeah. District Attorney Marianne Ryan stated that the 17-year-old used ChatGPT to search for, and I'm quoting her exact words here, theoretical ideas or fantasy stories regarding the killing of his family. The criminal complaint apparently shows transcripts of exchanges between the teenager and the chatbot written in the third person, all about a character named Adrian.
And the DA characterized these logs as gothic novel kind of stories.
Right.
But the courts now have to determine what this digital artifact actually represents. Like, is it an innocent piece of creative fiction? Is it a psychological rehearsal?
Yeah.
Or is it concrete evidence of criminal intent?
And this is where I really struggle with how the legal system is going to handle conversational AI. Think about your own workflow for a second.
Okay.
If I use an AI to write a gritty thriller novel about a complex bank robbery, and I'm asking the chatbot about security system bypasses, police response times, getaway routes, just to make the story realistic, my prompt history looks exactly like the search history of a criminal planning an actual heist.
It's distinguishable.
Right. So how can a jury possibly tell the difference between a creative fiction prompt and a literal murder rehearsal when there is absolutely no legal standard for it?
They can't.
Yeah.
You've hit on the exact void in our current jurisprudence. A fiction prompt and a criminal rehearsal produce the exact same text output.
Yeah.
There is no standard for a jury to read the difference.
Oh.
But the courts are not going to wait for a standard to be built. Discovery is happening right now in Massachusetts.
That's happening today.
Chat logs are becoming courtroom evidence. And generative AI companies are going to face endless subpoenas demanding conversational histories without any established framework for how to interpret human intent through a machine's output.
Which brings us directly to the civil frontier, because intent, accountability, and age verification are at the heart of a massive lawsuit filed just this past Thursday in Northern California.
This is the AD versus Character Technologies case.
Yes, exactly.
The civil case focuses entirely on the damage of unverified access. A 12-year-old girl in Kentucky allegedly opened a character.ai account at school back in 2024. She is 14 now, and the complaint alleges she suffered severe psychological harms, including grooming through simulated sexual encounters with the bots and active encouragement of self-harm and suicidality.
Yeah, I was reading through the actual federal complaint, and the single most important line for our deep dive today is paragraph 267. It's essentially four words in substance. Character.ai never asked plaintiff to verify her age.
Yeah, what stands out to you? Think about the timeline we just constructed in the previous segment.
Right, with the lobbying.
Exactly. You have an alleged 12-year-old gaining entirely unverified access to a powerful chatbot, resulting in a devastating federal lawsuit alleging severe harm. And at the exact same time, you have tech-funded think tanks explicitly lobbying state legislatures to ban age verification requirements for those exact same chatbots.
It's wild.
The disconnect between the boardroom strategy minimizing friction and the courtroom reality dealing with the fallout is just staggering.
There is also a very weird discrepancy in the public relations around this character.ai case that I need you to explain.
Oh, the press release.
Yes. The law firm representing the girl, Gibbs Mura, put out a press release announcing the lawsuit to the media. The actual legal complaint filed in court names five defendants, including Alphabet Inc.
Right.
But the press release completely omitted Alphabet Inc. It also bizarrely omitted the girl's age and what state she lives in. Why would a law firm hide the biggest tech company in the world from their own press release?
Well, it highlights a noticeable gap between what lawyers choose to formally allege under penalty of perjury in a federal court filing and what they choose to publicize to the media.
Okay, so it's a tactical choice.
Yeah. Naming Alphabet as a defendant in a PR blast invites an immediate, massive corporate response team.
Oh, that makes sense. You don't want Google's PR army coming down on you day one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for our listeners who are investors or builders, the real takeaway is the structural exposure of the tech itself.
Yeah.
Back in January, we saw a confidential settlement of five similar chatbot harm suits.
Right, I remember that.
And now, 7 months later, we have a brand new plaintiff in a brand new district. The legal exposure doesn't end with one settlement, especially when the fundamental design choice that caused the lawsuit, an account creation screen with zero verification, remains the focus of the litigation.
It's like leaving the front door wide open. So we have spent a lot of time exploring AI as a highly regulated risk in therapy, a contentious, uninvited default in our schools, and a really murky piece of legal evidence in murder and negligence trials.
A lot of heavy stuff.
Yeah, very heavy. But I want to explore the flip side of this collision. Let's look at AI as a tool of leverage for a vulnerable individual trying to navigate a massive, frankly terrifying, government bureaucracy.
Yes, this brings us to a man identified in the reporting simply as Chip to protect his medical privacy.
Right.
He is an 80-year-old Marine Corps veteran of the Vietnam War suffering from Agent Orange-related cancer and severe PTSD. And he needed to file a supplemental disability claim with the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Now, if you have ever dealt with a federal agency, you know that drafting a claim narrative is agonizing.
Oh, it's the worst.
You have to use the exact right phrasing to match their internal codes, or you just get denied. So this 80-year-old veteran sat down, opened up ChatGPT, typed out a messy list of his symptoms, and asked the AI to write the formal narrative for him.
Which is brilliant.
It is. But here is the crucial mechanic of why this worked. He didn't just copy and paste it. He proofread it himself multiple times, editing the output before he ever sent it to the government.
Right, saving the loop.
Yeah. Exactly. And 6 weeks later, the VA came back with a 100% disability rating, which means an extra $2,000 a month for him. His quote to the reporters was amazing. He said, "I'm uneasy with AI, but I think it's here to stay."
It is a remarkable story of individual initiative. But we have to look at the machinery operating on the other side of that claim, too.
Right, the VA side.
Yeah, because the VA isn't just reading these submissions with human eyes anymore. They have their own massive AI infrastructure. They're currently running a $485 million internal AI tool built by IBM.
Wow, almost half $1 billion.
Yeah. Think of it like a sous chef. It sorts through a veteran's chaotic file, pulling evidence from decades of handwritten military records and PDFs, and synthesizes it into a clean summary sheet for the human rater to evaluate.
I actually noticed in the source documents that the VA is incredibly explicit about the boundaries of that IBM tool. They state clearly that the AI does not make the final decision on the rating a veteran receives.
Which is a crucial distinction.
Right. A human rater has to make the actual call. In fact, they have quality specialists who randomly review claims every month just to ensure that human oversight is actually happening.
Well, that human oversight is under heavy federal scrutiny right now. Yeah, just last month, the chief scientist for the Government Accountability Office, which is essentially Congress's supreme watchdog agency, testified that human review remains absolutely critical as the VA scales this AI.
Ah, okay.
The GAO actually noted that 15 different recommendations regarding VA technology have remained completely unresolved since 2021.
Oh, wow. That's not great. But here's where it gets really interesting for me.
Yeah.
It's the incredible risk inherent in what Chip did.
Using the consumer AI.
Yeah. We know consumer chatbots hallucinate. They invent things in very fluent, confident prose. So what happens if an 80-year-old veteran asks ChatGPT to write his claim and the AI decides to, you know, invent a combat deployment that never happened or adds a symptom who doesn't actually have just to make the narrative flow better?
It's huge risk.
If that veteran doesn't meticulously proofread the document and they submit it to the federal government, they just signed a false statement on a federal benefits claim.
Yeah, the machine doesn't go to federal prison for fraud.
Exactly. The veteran holds all the liability.
You've isolated the critical architectural lesson of this entire deep dive right there. It is all about the handoff between human and machine.
The handoff, yeah.
The successful design in Chip's story wasn't that he let the AI decide his fate or speak for him. It was that he used it strictly as a drafting tool and manually took ownership of the final text.
He kept control.
Exactly. He inadvertently mirrored the exact policy the VA uses internally. The machine organizes the chaotic data, but the human must sign their name to the final decision. The lesson for builders and users is to build the handoff, not a shortcut around it.
That makes total sense. Well, it's an incredible amount to process. Let's do a quick recap of the thematic journey we've been on today.
Sure.
We started in Colorado watching the law force license humans to stay in the therapy room in real time with the machines. We watched Google test the absolute limits of uninvited AI by pushing opt-out defaults onto 150 million users in our classrooms.
Yeah, the Gemini rollout.
Right. We saw the courts grappling with unverified 12-year-olds and the impossibility of distinguishing a creative fiction prompt from a literal murder rehearsal. And finally, we saw an 80-year-old Marine find a way to make consumer tech work for him against a massive federal bureaucracy entirely through the power of proofreading.
It is a profound structural shift across every domain of society. And I want to leave you with one final thought that bridges these isolated stories.
Let's hear it.
Today, we saw 17-year-old's AI chat logs introduced as potential evidence in a criminal murder trial, and an 80-year-old veteran using consumer AI to draft a federal benefits claim. But what happens tomorrow when these two realities intersect?
What do you mean?
Imagine a veteran who relies entirely on a chatbot to file a claim, doesn't proofread it, and accidentally submits a massive AI hallucination. Will their prompt history be subpoenaed by a prosecutor to prove they intended to commit federal fraud? Or will the courts treat the machine's hallucination as just an innocent mistake?
Wow.
The standard for reading human intent through a machine's output doesn't exist yet, but it's coming.
That is a fascinating question, and we will be right here tracking it when it does. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you on the next one.